The Courage to Lead, Episode 41.
You're listening to the IB4E Coaching Podcast.
Brought to you by IB4E Coaching, business coaching for executives, entrepreneurs, and small business professionals. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com. Hey, Coach Harlan here. Welcome back to the podcast. Hope you're having a great day. I am having a good day, and I'm excited to talk to my next guest. Let me introduce you to Teresa Murr. Teresa is an author, coach, and speaker who published the book, The Art of Assisting Aging Parents. Discover the journey to honor your parents, create treasured memories, and live life to the fullest. Her book is based on a 35-year career as a physical therapist and caring for her parents. During her multidisciplinary group therapy efforts in skilled rehabilitation, Teresa found a system to build the body, brain, and spirit to achieve superior mobility and personal life. Current research supports the therapeutic benefits of group face-to-face interactions on health and well-being. Teresa believes that the people worldwide can use her Experi-Age training as they face the challenge of keeping their parents healthy and aging in place while continuing to manage their personal life and commitments. She uses her unique Experi-Age training to help people of all ages find their strengths and life vision, set goals, target concrete activities to achieve the goals while taking part in group interactions and enjoying life. Teresa also teaches physical, occupational, and speech therapists to create impactful group therapy treatments that improve patient outcomes, productivity, and revenue. Teresa and her husband live in Iowa, and they have three grown children, and she loves to spend time gardening, cooking, and painting. Teresa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Harlan. It's a pleasure to be here.
No, it's good to have you on. I'm excited to hear about your book, how you came about writing the book and everything like that, the struggles maybe that you had gone through with that, and then talk about your Experi-Age training. Sounds fascinating. Definitely want to get into that. But first, and my listeners know what's coming, I have a series of questions that I always ask every one of my guests on the show. These are the questions made famous by James Lipton on his award-winning television show, Inside the Actor's Studio. Mr. Lipton would ask these questions of his Hollywood guests, and I figure if they're good for the Hollywood elite, these questions are good enough for my guests. So, Teresa, if you are ready, I have 10 questions for you. Question number one, what is your favorite word?
Molly, Elizabeth, and Alex is my children. My favorite word. Yeah.
Nice. What is your least favorite word?
Tardy. Ooh. That means I'm late and I start panicking.
I am the same way. What turns you on?
I love to paint.
Okay. Nice. What turns you off?
I think trying to, or being told I need to read a bunch of books about things I already know. And I just don't want to spend the time doing that.
What sound or noise do you love?
I love the sound of children playing and laughing. It warms my heart.
Absolutely. And what sound or noise do you hate?
I think the words, the company will be here in 30 minutes. I'm like, again, panic.
Panic.
Is the house clean, you know?
What is your favorite curse word?
It would be the F word. Yeah. Okay. And I usually try to change it up a little bit. And my husband will say, you know, if you're going to say the word, just say the word. But I try to, you know, make a little less of it.
Sure. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I always thought I wanted to be a psychiatrist. I love the brain. I love neuroplasticity, and I like to work with people. So I always thought that would be a fun career.
Yeah. Awesome. What profession would you not like to do?
Well, even though I love to cook and I would consider myself a foodie, I would not want to cook in a restaurant. You know, it just that just doesn't sound like fun to me.
It's a lot of work.
Yes, yes.
All right. And finally, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I would like to just hear the words, I love you. And so, I think that's the highest part of a relationship is love. And I would just want to enter into that experience.
Very cool. Good answer. All right. Well, we will get back in just a minute. We'll talk about your book, The Art of Assisting Aging Parents. We'll talk about your background, what led you into the physical therapy and the different things you're doing, multidisciplinary group therapy, and talk about your Experi-Age training. All right. So we will be right back right after this message. So stick with us.
Imagine having a trusted group of CEOs at your disposal. Imagine having your very own peer advisory team who could work you through the problems and questions in your business before you had to make those difficult decisions. Imagine you had a group of advisors that had your back and met for the sole purpose of making you successful in your business. What would you be able to accomplish then? Well, you don't have to imagine anymore. You can have that and more when you join my Business Success Mastermind Group. Join my Business Success Mastermind Group today. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com/mastermind.
All right. And we are back with Teresa. Thanks again very much for being on the podcast. Glad you could join us all the way from Iowa. This is very cool. So give us a little bit of a peek at your background. How did you get started in all of this?
Well, I became a physical therapist about 36 years ago. And I just, you know, as I said before, I love science. I love the brain and I loved the movements of the body. And so I wanted to pair my, you know, passion for helping people along with my passion for science. So I chose that profession. I found out pretty quickly that it just didn't cut the creative side that I have in me. Like I said, I'm a painter. I love art. I love to be creative. And a lot of physical therapy just didn't do that for me. So about 20 years into my profession, I mean, we can talk about the courage to stay in a profession for, you know, a long time just to, you know, to hang in there and learn as much as you can. Sure. But about 20 years into the profession, I found multidisciplinary group therapy.
Okay.
And yeah, and that is done like by physical therapy, occupational speech therapy. And we set up these exceptional experiences for our patients. And I know there's two types of group therapy, and I teach the one type, and the other type is just getting a group together and everybody does the same exercises, you know.
Okay.
But this is a little bit more complex, and I was able to bring in all kinds of different like therapy tools and strategies and, you know, things for the body and the brain, and just even watching the spirit develop, you know, as yeah. people engaged in these activities. And they had a good time. And, you know, they also just now, actually what we have now is the research behind all of this and why it works. You know, about 15 years ago when I started this, there wasn't a lot of research out, you know, about group therapy. So I actually put a framework around it, and I just kind of kept it in my head for about 15 years. And then I decided to write my book. Okay. You know, and I put that framework into my book, and I geared it for caregivers and the aging.
Okay. Before we get into the book, though, let's go back a little bit to the group therapy. Explain to me kind of what that looks like. If I was in one of these group therapy sessions, what type of things would you do, the multidisciplinary group therapy?
Okay. Yeah. We would get a group together, and they could be various levels. You could have, you know, patients that are a little bit higher in mobility and some lower. And that's even part of the group, part of the group dynamics. But we would put together exercises or activities such as we might be playing a word game and having a patient standing up at an easel, and they would be writing the words while we would be challenging their balance. And we might do that, yeah, by putting them on like a piece of foam to stand on. And so we're working on, like, one therapist is working on balance. The other one is working on the cognition or the word finding skills.
Nice.
Yes. And so even what...
I'm sorry. Everything is connected, right?
Right.
So the more you can do using all of those features, it may take your mind off of that one limitation you think you have, right? Because you're thinking of all the other things at the same time.
Yes, yes, nice. Exactly. Yes. And actually doing those, what we call dual tasking, you use the same part of your brain for the different tasks, and it's more challenging. you know, and all this plays into them going home and being able to function at a high level at home, you know. Nice. So yes. So I think it's a step above, and that's my challenge. Another courage thing right now is actually teaching therapists that this is a superior treatment, you know, or it's a treatment option. And a lot of therapists have not embraced it yet at this time. So again, you know, going back to the courage thing, you know, kind of stepping out and doing that. But yes, and like another thing I'd love to do, I love to put one patient on the Swiss ball, you know, the big exercise ball, and they sit on the ball. And I'm behind them, like I'm sitting on a stool. I have a belt around them, a gait belt, and I'm hanging on to that. And, you know, we work on their balance on the ball, and then they're taking another ball and throwing it to the other people in the group, you know? And so they're, you know, they're rotating their trunk, they're, you know, having to balance. And then we'll even throw a word game in with that, like maybe even remembering something interesting about each patient. And, you know, it might even be like, and I know this sounds kind of simple, but, you know, it's like, what's your favorite candy bar, you know? But again, like you did your questions, it's just about remembering something about each patient, you know, so they come back the next week and they know, you know, we'd say, well, we'll test their memory, you know, and say, you know, what was her favorite candy bar? Or, you know, I mean, it just gives them something to think about. And then, like you said, kind of take their mind off of some, maybe even a physical disability or a physical, or it could be pain. And it kind of takes their mind off of that and decreases their anxiety and helps them, puts them in a better, you know, position to function well.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's almost like a game at that point. So you're not really, working. You're not really practicing. You're just kind of playing a game. So you don't realize you're actually getting the therapy at the same time. I like that.
Yes.
That's fun. And so I guess you've probably seen some great results from this. Can you share some of the results you've seen? How this has helped people?
Yeah. You know, I did see very good results. And I think because it's such a holistic approach, you know, as you're working with the mind, the body, and the spirit, and just seeing people engaged. And I even saw a lot of like secondary gains. Like the patients started becoming friends. Sometimes they're there, you know, a month to 2 months, you know. Yeah. And they started becoming friends, and they started building up some networks within those people and the community. And, you know, they actually tried harder because I know, like, sometimes we'll take a ball and roll it to somebody and have them kick it back to us. And again, it's balance, you know. But when I would put a ball between a group of people and say they were all sitting in a circle, and if you put the ball in the middle of the circle and they kick it to each other, I've never seen people get so, you know, they almost get that competitive spirit and they work harder, faster. Their reaction times are better, you know. And, you know, those are things that sometimes you don't really document or take note of. But actually, that type of exercise and behavior is kind of what makes you, it's almost like helps make you into a winner. Or, you know, a winner in life or in therapy or whatever, you know. And I kind of you know, as I've been studying this and researching it and finding out there's so many benefits to being in a group, but, you know, I kind of liken it to playing a football game. And the football team, you know, they can't just watch film forever, you know, and they can't just go to the weight room forever. They have to get face to face, you know, body to body. They have to get into a group experience to know how to play the game.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can't learn things from watching a video. You have to actually get out there and do it.
Right.
What has the current pandemic, the COVID pandemic, done to things like that? Are groups still allowed to get together, or?
They're just starting to get back together. And we've done maybe a little bit of group and, but it's within the social distance, but no, that really took away the face-to-face interactions and it increased social isolation, and social isolation has been proven to, you know, it causes illness is mm-hmm. what happened. I mean, I could go into depth of things it does. And I know that our country spends billions of dollars every year just on social isolation, you know, mm-hmm. the causes of the illness. And they're predicting with the caregivers right now that are caring for the elderly or the ill, it's going to move into the trillions of dollars in the near future. And that also probably has to do a little bit with the baby boomers, you know, coming into play. Sure. But yeah, I mean, it's really, social isolation is really a problem, you know, for your health.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, I hope we can get back to face-to-face meetings.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Very soon. All right. So tell me about your book, The Art of Assisting Aging Parents. How did that come about?
Well, it was about 3 years ago and or maybe a little bit longer. I was taking care of my own mother. And I actually left Iowa for a couple years. My husband was very generous and he just said, you know, just go help your mom. You know, he knew I wanted to. And so I did. And I actually got a couple physical therapy jobs in the city and helped her. And at that time, I just decided to start writing a book because there were so many people coming up to me and my sisters saying, what do I do with my aging parents? So I decided to write the book, and I know that caregivers have a whole different dynamic. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the siblings, and then there's the part where, you know, you need to take care of yourself and you don't pay enough attention to your own self as this process goes along. And so there's so many dynamics. And so I wrote a book that has a proactive aging process where, it just gives you all the healthy lifestyle strategies. You know, and then I add a couple educational theories so that you can, you know, actually get to know yourself and your, what I did in physical therapy was I got to know my patients better by using this educational theory, and you get to know yourself better and your communication ramps up, you know, and it's more effective. And so I did that. And then I have a 4-step method that, as you said in the beginning of this introduction, I help people, you know, find their strengths, work on their weaknesses, you know, and then pair that with their life vision so they can really have passion for life. And then I help them set goals and come up with these concrete activities like we would do in therapy that help you get to your goals. You know, it's just the little things you do every day, you know, like we all have to do. And it could be exercise, breathing. People don't even realize how important breathing is, you know, for your health. Meditation and mindfulness actually grows your brain. And if you just take a little bit of time every day to be mindful of what you're doing, you're actually growing your brain.
Hmm.
Yeah. So there's so many little things we can be doing for ourselves that don't even cost any money. And we can prepare ourselves to have the brain we need when we get into our 80s and 90s.
Yeah, because that's one of the first things that I know some of the folks, I won't go into any of their names in case they're listening to the podcast, but you see those faculties starting to drift down a little bit. I know a good friend of mine, his mom was in care for a while. She passed recently, but you could just see her slowly, you know, losing her memory short-term and long-term. She couldn't recognize him when he came to visit a few times. It was scary. And that, I think that's one of the things that really scares me is the whole, dementia and Alzheimer's type thing. In your book, do you go into stuff like that and what you can do to try to either ward off some of those effects or how to help?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. And that is really, in the healthy lifestyle strategies. And I teach people about nutrition and hydration, about breathing correctly, you know, the meditation and mindfulness, exercises for your body and brain. And I think that's it. Oh, and sleep is huge, you know. But you know, and I listened to some statistics last fall, and they said that I think it's 95% of dementia is preventable.
Really?
Yes. And that's
95.
Yeah, that is huge. And just to know that we can do something, you know, as a profession, as a physical therapy profession, but really it's all of our responsibility, you know, to get on board and start doing these things. And really what you want to do is do them in, you know, like your middle age, and you start building up like a cognitive reserve, or, you know, it's almost like putting gas in your car. You want to fill up the tank.
Right.
Now, yeah. Now, if we do these healthy lifestyle strategies and practice them, we're filling up our tank so that when we get into our 70s, 80s, 90s, we'll actually, we'll have more gas, or we'll have more brain power to, you know, to actually live and function and actually enjoy life. It's a quality of life issue, you know?
So what type of things do you recommend? Is it like reading? Is it having a hobby, staying engaged, traveling? What types of things do you recommend?
Yes. And that is, those are great things for your brain. Traveling is excellent. You're going to see new things, you know. Your brain likes novel things, something new. Your brain loves surprises. You get kind of a hit of dopamine. I know in our group therapy, we try to bring in the sensory stimulation. If you stimulate your senses, you know, what you see, what you hear, what you feel, the weights, you know, and that's where I talk about that movement of your body. That actually increases your brain, what we call neuroplasticity. And you either strengthen your neural networks that you need, or you can build new ones. The other thing it does is it wakes up your brain for learning, and learning is critical to, you know, to continue to keep your brain strong, you know, learning something new. And I know even last year, and I think that I tell a lot of people this last year, and I was just getting my business off the ground last year. And it just happened to be that the stock market was in, you know, it was an opportune time to get into the stock market. And that was on my bucket list. I always wanted to do some day trading, you know, it's like crazy. And then, you know, the market fell and I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. My physical therapy hours were cut due to the pandemic.
Sure.
So I jumped in, but you know, what I'm telling people now is that I really feel like I did that, you know, for my brain. You know, I learned something new. Mm-hmm. I had to do research every day. I had to do comparisons, contrasts, make decisions. So it's something like that. Now, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, learn a new language, which is also, you know, something you can do. Yeah. But it's challenging your brain. You need to, you know, push yourself a little bit. Just a scientist that I like, his name is Dr. Michael Mersnick, and he has the book Softwired. And I like that. I like his style on how he teaches people on, you know, how to, you know, it's about the neuroplasticity. And he gives real practical advice of what to do, you know?
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like I said, a lot of this is simple. It just takes a little bit of time. Yeah. Wow. But you know, yeah, eating like the Mediterranean diet, I like to teach that. That's a good place to start.
Nice.
And again, we need to take the inflammation out of our bodies and our brains so that we can be healthy. But so I teach, you know, a lot of those tools. Yeah.
Awesome. And so are you still doing the physical therapy, or are you focusing more on this now?
Yeah, I'm focusing more on this.
Okay.
I really do want to teach the group therapy, you know, to therapists. Yeah. But I want to help people too, if they want to make a career change, or if they feel like they have a creative, kind of a creative genius that they want to express.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love to analyze. I've been doing that for 35 years in my therapy. Yeah, so therapists are analyzers, and I love to have a puzzle of a person and help them figure out their next step and what to do.
Awesome. And so you actually help people find their skill, like painting or drawing or writing?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Or whatever it might be that, you know, it might be like a creative talent, or it might just be a different talent that they want to express. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Very cool. And so how did you make the decision then to, or was the decision made for you because of the pandemic, to leave the comfort of kind of the 9-to-5 and shift your focus to doing things like this, which I think this is phenomenal. I love the Xperia H.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It wasn't really a tough decision because I knew I had to leave. There just wasn't any more, there wasn't anywhere to go for me as in that type of a clinical setting. And I had done everything I wanted to do in physical therapy. And I had a variety of jobs because for me, every time I got bored and, you know, I had learned everything I could at a certain facility, I would just move on into a different, you know, different population, different facility. And so I, you know, it wasn't a real hard decision to leave. I just had to find something to go to, you know, and that's why after I wrote the book, I decided to, you know, develop a business around kind of around the book, which actually led into more of that group therapy focus. And I really have a passion for that. Nice. So,
No, it sounds awesome. But yeah, the courage to move on, like you said, know when to move on and actually do it. The courage to write the book, the courage to continually learn new things and apply these different skills from different areas. Where did that courage come from? Where did you get that courage?
Well, I think I've always been a pretty strong-willed person. And I've always, I am an introvert. And sometimes I have to push myself to be an extrovert. And that's kind of in some of the training I do with multiple intelligences. If you have an intelligence that isn't very strong, sometimes you have to work on it. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And to me, sometimes I have to push myself out of my comfort zone, you know, being an introvert. So, but I must say, even though I'm an introvert, I feel like I always got what I wanted. Nice. And I think, yeah. And I think I just did that by just being strong-willed and, very convicted in knowing, you know, what I wanted.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, some of the different types of courage that I've seen just in your story, intellectual courage, the courage to set aside long-held beliefs, knowing that there's probably new information available, right? Constantly learning. I've got a Kindle book that is bursting at the seams with, in fact, I think I downloaded your book too, that's just bursting at the seams because I love to learn, want to learn new things. I know there's newer information out there. The disciplined courage to have a plan in mind and stick to that plan, even though there's shiny objects, even though there's, you know, the little squirrels that pop up every once in a while, stay true to whatever your plan is. The moral courage to do what's right, even if it's unpopular, the social courage to say what needs to be said, even if it's unpopular or goes against the grain. Of those different types of courage, or maybe a different one we haven't talked about yet, what type of courage do you think has helped you the most in getting to where you are?
I think that it would probably be like the physical and intellectual courage, because I always showed up, you know, even though I didn't feel at like when I was, you know, in the clinical physical therapy setting, I knew I had my place, you know, but being the introvert and wanting, like I said, I'm very convicted in how I want to do things. So I did things the way I wanted to, you know, and I think, and you know, and I'm not like bashing any place I worked for, but I never felt real appreciated, you know, I guess I just, you know, but it was funny because when I left, you know, those places, like I just had somebody tell me, maybe a half a year ago, she said, oh, I would hire you back in a heartbeat, you know, or, you know, and so that comes back to me saying, okay, you were appreciated, you know, and it is a very fast paced, you know, thing we're doing every day. We're, you know, under, you know, the gun for productivity and, you know, efficiencies. And so, I think just, you know, showing up and being there,
that's huge.
Yeah. And I guess I really didn't realize that until later when people would say, like, if I was gone for a long vacation, they'd say, gosh, we're so glad you're back. And, you know, we missed you. And, you know, but, so yeah, I think that would be, and the courage to hang in there that long, I think took the intelligence and the physical, because truly, you know, there were so many other things I wanted to do.
Yeah, absolutely. During that time that you were working as a physical therapist, did you ever have a team that you led? Were you in charge of anybody? Do you have employees or people direct reports?
I never really went into management, but I guess I was kind of a team leader in some, or I was the assistant manager in one building. One of the reasons I did that was because I just had more flexibility. I told you about my three children and their names, how important they are to me. Yeah. But, you know, I really wanted the flexibility to be there for them and to raise them. Yeah. So I didn't want to take on any real leadership positions during those years.
But then part of the team that you worked together in those multidisciplinary group therapy sessions and stuff, if I was to bump into any of those people and talk to them about maybe what your leadership style was, or what did you bring to the group? What do you think they'd say?
I guess my leadership style was I led by example.
Okay.
And I don't know if that fits into any category. I don't know if it would be the moral leadership. Mm-hmm. I have certain standards like that I would never go against. I would never feel good doing, you know, not doing 100%, you know. And I really made it clear to my patients too that, you know, we're not going for 99%. We're going for 100%, you know. Yeah. And we'll get there. And you know, if we don't get there, it's okay. But we always push for the highest level, you know, because... Sure. Yeah, I wanted to see them be as functional as they could, you know, and I knew that would lead to their higher quality of life. But so maybe it would be actually kind of be that moral, that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that's if I was to answer those questions at the beginning, the one role that I would not like to do, I think would probably be in the medical field. I'm way too empathetic. If I'm talking to somebody who has a back pain, my back starts to hurt. If they're having migraines, my brain starts to hurt. And I think it would be tough to be on that front line working with people, not to feel empathetic towards them and stuff. And like you said, showing up is huge. You must have had times where you just were frustrated and maybe felt like, you know, either I'm on a treadmill, this isn't working the way I thought it would, or... Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? How was that? How did you get through that?
Yeah. Well, yes. And I would, you know, I went through a lot of transition because 36 years ago, therapy was very different than it is today. You know, it was much more of a relaxed atmosphere. You know, even the insurance companies back then probably paid for more therapy than they do now. Now, you know, where there's just, you know, there's productivity standards, efficiency standards, and you need to get your patient out as fast as you can, you know, most times. So I think just, you know, that transition, getting through that transition was, you know, something that I kind of endured in a way. You know, things are really different these days. So yeah, there were days, and I was one too, where, I would take a lot of time just to think about, you know, well, what am I going to do with my patients tomorrow to help them, you know, get better. So it took a lot of emotional energy. And so that was taxing. It really was. And there were many days I came home kind of frustrated with my job. Yeah. And knowing, you know, and just because I had the courage to leave, I'm noticing now that I feel a little less stress and a little more happy, and knowing I can still affect the profession in a way, but yet it's just going to be a little bit different, you know?
Sure.
But I am feeling a little bit of stress. And I guess too, this is fun for me, you know, having that creative side and putting all these pieces together and creating something every day and creating programs and courses and things. It makes me happy. Yeah.
Nice. So you're actually like consulting to other physical therapists and people like that to teach them this program?
Nice. Yes.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Do you offer these programs to what, local hospitals, local physical therapy places? Do you go to like the old folks' homes and help out there? Or how do you do this? How do you apply your trade?
Mm-hmm. Well, right now I have a 3-hour course. It's on a continuing education platform.
Nice.
On group therapy, yes. And then I have increased my course, my own course, to a 6-hour course. And I am marketing that now to individuals in usually rehab hospitals and skilled nursing. But I also want to have therapists know that this does work with outpatients, and even Medicare pays for maintenance therapy. So, nice. You know, just to maintain people, this would be a wonderful way to maintain, you know, patients. Sure. And so, yeah, I just, you know, I have begun marketing to, you know, to more individuals. And yeah, I'm finding there's a lot of innovative therapists out there, and I'm anxious to, you know, talk to them and maybe get some stuff going with them too.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. Is there another book in the works?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Yeah. That was a kind of a big undertaking. I would get these courses up and going, but I'm not so sure. I've got a few ideas, and if it just comes really easy this time, the first one was a little bit, you know,
sure,
an experience.
But now the courses, are they going to be live in-person courses? Will you be doing any of this remotely, or will they be like on-demand courses people could go out on the internet and find?
The one is with Allied Health Education, so they can get that 3-hour course. My course I'm setting up to be like monthly, or, you know, and actually it will be the live webinar. Okay. Yeah. And if we're able to not social distance, then it can be in person. Nice. Which, yeah, in person will be good too, because I'll be able to show so many more of the techniques, you know, live. Then, you know, I was really, really had a hard time doing that with the first course I taped. You know, I just had a lot of pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you go out to try to sell these courses, do you encounter resistance? And if so, where's that resistance coming from? Is it coming from the doctors? Is it coming from the insurance companies?
Well, I think one barrier I have to cross with therapists is telling them that this is different, you know, because like I said, there's two types of group therapy, and one is, and actually a lot of people probably do this group therapy where you have your therapist and you gather your patients, and it could even be very, very similar patients. Like everybody just had a total knee done this week, and we're going to get you together and do exercises. So they might sit in a circle, and they might, you know, do like long arc quad, or, you know, kick their legs up, or pump their ankles, or, you know, do things like that. And so I have to get them to know, because that really doesn't take much training. But right. The group therapy that I do, you know, there's a lot of components. They're all research based. I have to get them over this barrier that it's hard to do, and that it's not worth it. And I have to teach them how it improves patient outcomes, and it will improve, as a company, it will improve your productivity and your revenue. And those are three issues that every therapist faces, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. So it's just getting that across to them that, you know, this is a wonderful therapy. It's underutilized. And if you do use it, you know, you're going to get some amazing benefits. So yeah, that's my barrier right now.
Yeah. But you say there's a lot of scientific studies that back this up, right?
There are. Yeah. There are.
Hmm.
Yes.
And so how would you go about then getting that point to them? Would it be through little webinars to kind of teach them the science behind it and why this is important?
Yes. And in my courses too, I go through, you know, the benefits of group therapy, and then I unpack every benefit and tell you why. Research-based, you know, just being face-to-face, you know, your body emits hormones. It makes you more empathetic. You know, it makes you more caring. It takes, you know, takes away some of the anxiety. And I do tell therapists, you know, what, you know, it's like, what if we could have our patients come to us and be this type of person? Yeah. And yeah, I liken it to Stephen Covey's seventh habit, which mm-hmm. is sharpening the saw.
Yes.
Yeah. And I say, if our patients can sharpen the saw and come to us, or we can help them to sharpen the saw and then they can go out into the world, just think of what we could do for healthcare and for quality of life. And that's what gets me excited.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it just pumps me up to know I can make this big difference. And yeah. And we can have fun doing it because, you know, there's so many fun groups you can put together.
Absolutely. No, it does. It sounds like fun. And I can definitely see, like I said, having been in corporate training, working with different clients, when you can take the element of work away and make it fun, people learn the lessons just as readily, but even more so, I think, because they're not focusing on it, right? It just kind of happens. So I think that's awesome. So we talked a little bit about the moral courage, and that sounds like the moral courage, the intellectual courage, definitely your strong skills. Are there any types of courage maybe that are come a little bit less easy for you, maybe a little bit harder for you? I know you talked about you're an introvert. So you don't like to get up on stage, but now you kind of have to, right? Mm-hmm. But are there other types of courage that maybe are a little bit more challenging for you?
Yeah, and that is a good question. I was thinking of that, you know how usually your strong point can be your weak point, mm-hmm. you know? And I think too that because I am an introvert, sometimes I may don't step up and speak out enough. And that could even tie into the moral courage. Mm. And I think the moral courage is of the utmost importance because that has to be something you're on all the time.
Yes.
You know? Yep. Yeah. Like sometimes I think, well, you could put off maybe this courage till tomorrow and it wouldn't make any that much difference. But moral courage, you know, that's something I just think you cannot compromise, you know? So that might be actually my strength, might be my weakness too. Mm. And I was thinking, let's see if there's any other, I think, you know, I would say with that introvert, maybe I might be a little timid, you know, sometimes, and I need to get over that. As an entrepreneur, I can't be timid and I can't be afraid. And yeah, and if I am afraid and timid, you know, I just have to know that failure is okay.
Sure.
Yeah, and I can fail every day, and tomorrow I'll be stronger.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, it's not how many times you get knocked down; it's how many times you get back up, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I was brought up Roman Catholic, so we were taught not to brag. Right, bragging is bad. Mm-hmm. So I find it hard sometimes to toot my own horn. Mm. When you're getting ready to sell a program like this to people, you have to be able to get up there and really push that out. So I can see how that could be a challenge. Mm-hmm. But you know, courage to me is about the action. It's very easy to think great thoughts while I'm sitting on the couch with my fuzzy slippers on, right? It's the action, taking the action, actually doing things. And I think you're right about the moral courage. If you have a good, strong moral conviction and you stand up and do what needs to be done and do it, you know, consistently, I think those other types of courage kind of come naturally to that. So I think you're right. Absolutely. So what's next for you? You've got your book out there. You've got your programs you're putting together. What's next?
Yeah, I just really want to get out and share this. And, you know, if I had to reverse engineer my business, really what I wanted to do at the very end, or be the highlight of it all, is to coach people to their highest level of creativity, nice. You know? So I'm kind of holding that out there, and yeah, I'm kind of getting there, but I think I can also help therapists be creative and flexible, you know? So I think that that would be what would be next for me. And even I have a little bit of a passion for business, and I really enjoyed investing, and I continue to do that. I mean, it was very well worth it. So I want to see other people do well.
Nice.
Yeah. So I want to get in front of other people and say, you know, this is what you need to do, and this is, you know, this is how to do it. And just have that creative twist with it. Because, you know, one thing that really kind of bores me is just to do things the same every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I like to do things different. That's probably why people maybe didn't even understand me, because, you know, they're like, okay, well, we do it this way. And I'm always like, well, why can't we do it this way? You know? Right. So I like to mix things up, and I loved how you were talking about, you know, reading all the books and getting all the information. Yes. And that's what I like to do too, is I like new ideas. I like to come up with new things. Yes. So that would be like a dream job for me to get to that point.
Yeah. One of the things, you know, again, if I was being asked those 10 questions, what's my least favorite word is anytime somebody says can't, or anytime somebody says, this is the way we've always done it. To me, those two things are death knell to, especially to a business. You know, if this is the way you've always done it, set that aside, ask your employees, how can we improve this? Or I want to make a 20% improvement in our time or productivity or quality, and leave it to the employees. They will come up with ways to improve things. But you have to be able to have that courage to set aside how you've done it all your life, how you set things up, set that aside and be open to new things. That's why I'm constantly reading books. I coach businesses. I don't want to coach businesses on 30-year-old knowledge. There's new knowledge out there. I need to know what that new, you know, latest and greatest is so I can help them. So definitely. Yeah. So Teresa, if people want to get in touch with you or learn more about your programs, how can they reach out to you? What's your website?
It's www.teresamurr.com.
Okay.
Yeah. And on that website, there is a place for a strategy call, or what I just call an elite coaching call.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you do want to find out, you know, what your creative genius is and how to go about, you know, taking the first step to, you know, expressing it in the world, I would love to chat with you. I'm giving I give away like 10 free calls a month.
Nice.
And you can sign up on my website for a 20-minute free elite coaching call.
Very cool.
Yes.
And can they get your book on your website, or is that available?
Yes, it is. It is on my website, but it's just the Amazon link is on my website. Yes.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. And that is The Art of Assisting Aging Parents.
Yes.
Very cool. Good job. Well, hey, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. I love the sound of your program. I can definitely see the benefits of it. I don't understand why most therapy groups have not reached out to you to say, hey, help us build this program, because I think this is excellent. And I wish you all the best. Thank you so much. Sorry, I interrupted you again. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Thank you for having me. It was so fun to talk to you today.
Yeah, no, it's been excellent. Thank you. And listeners, I hope you guys enjoyed this and have taken away some good points on this. Definitely look up the book, check out the website, and learn more about this program. And if you know anybody who's in the physical therapy realm, tune them in. You know, have them come and check this out too, because I think it'll be good. And that's it. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, make sure you share it with your family, friends, and colleagues. And stay tuned, because there's always more coming. And that's it for me, Coach Harlan, saying so long for now.